everybody. Welcome back to But Why the Podcast. And today we are talking about Tomb Raider. As always, I'm Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And it's probably not a shock to anybody that I'm leading this episode. And we've had two episodes in the past, but it's Lara Croft and Tomb Raider's 25th anniversary this year. And we're at episode 167 now, and Tomb Raider was the first episode of this podcast with different hosts, and I don't think you can find it anywhere. So we're taking a page out of Crystal Dynamics books and rebooting our Tomb Raider episode. So the first question is, how familiar are you with Tomb Raider, and what's your level of involvement with the series? Like, how many games have you played? Do you have a favorite one? That kind of stuff. Matt, you can go first.
Obviously, I'm familiar enough that we've had three episodes. This is now three episodes of this podcast. My level of involvement with the series. Obviously, I played some of the early PlayStation games, but that's about it. I haven't really played much. Never like one of my big like type series growing up. So my level of involvement at this point is doing another Tomb Raider episode every year plus that we have to do. That's about the biggest involvement. And I've seen all the movies that I actually really enjoy, except that second one with Angelina Jolie, terrible. But like between the reboot movie, I'm excited for the second one, or the sequel that coming, and then obviously the original one.
As a Tomb Raider stan, I'm perfectly fine with admitting that Cradle of Life is just awful in every way possible. Adrian?
Yeah, I'm pretty involved in Tomb Raider, not as much as Kate, obviously, but you know, I played some of the early games, I've seen the movies, I've played all of the reboot games, I saw the new movie. Yeah, pretty familiar with her as a character. She's badass. And yeah, that's really it. Like, who doesn't know Tomb Raider? Who doesn't know Lara Croft?
All the people that like Uncharted that think they're the first.
That's fair.
Yes. which we'll talk about that stuff, which I think it is a good time. This is technically our fourth Tomb Raider episode because we reviewed the Alicia Vikander movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did do that.
So if you're listening to this, you can go check out that review because I actually think it was pretty fun. And then Adrian and Matt made me mad at the end. So have fun with that episode. It was
Because
you all said that her dual guns was stupid. And I was like, how dare you?
It was terrible.
Yeah, no, okay, we're not going down there again. We're not, no.
Also, her riding the bike for like 30 minutes was weird.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But we have a movie section of this episode. Let's keep the chaos at bay until then. So for me, if you have followed me on Twitter, if you've listened to this podcast, I am probably the biggest Tomb Raider fan that I know, just because for me, Tomb Raider was the very first game that I ever beat by myself. It was the first game that I ever owned myself, and my mom bought it for me specifically because she knew that I loved Indiana Jones, and she wanted me to play a game with female protagonist. So she saved up, bought me a PS, the original PlayStation, and then bought me 1 and 2 at the same time. So when it comes to like my life as a gamer, Tomb Raider has been pretty influential in shaping my interests, both from like the game mechanics side and then just like the adventure side, because it already integrated with like how much I loved indie and everything like that.
Did this start your love for women with big biceps?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think Lara Croft is definitely on like the sleeves or bullshit, like,
oh yeah, she is
for sure.
She's like, sleeves, I don't know her. I actually outside of her motorcycle jacket, I think every outfit she has doesn't have sleeves.
Yeah, she's not about that sleeve life.
So we're gonna dive into the history of Tomb Raider. So Tomb Raider is a media franchise that originated with an action-adventure video game series created by British gaming company Core Designs, formerly owned by Eidos Interactive, then by Square Enix Europe, after Square Enix's acquisition of Eidos in 2009.
Think Hitman episode, this is where all this comes into play.
Yeah. The franchise focuses on fictional British archaeologist Lara Croft, who travels around the world searching for lost artifacts and infiltrating dangerous tombs and ruins. Gameplay generally focuses on exploration of environments, solving puzzles, navigating hostile environments filled with traps, and fighting enemies. So development for the first Tomb Raider game began in 1994, and it was released in October of 1996. Its critical and commercial success prompted Core Design to develop a new game annually for the next 4 years, which put a strain on the staff and, honestly, it dipped in quality. If I'm gonna, yeah. The sixth game, The Angel of Darkness, faced difficulties during development and was considered a failure at release. Low-key love this game. Just because she's like has like this evil Lara vibe going on, which is really cool for me, especially with her costumes. And this prompted Eidos to switch development duties to Crystal Dynamics, which has been the series' primary developer since. Other developers have continued to spin off titles and ports of the mainline series as well. That includes like mobile games, some like small co-op pieces. I know Xbox Arcade had released a couple. As we dive into, like, in order to talk about the history, we also have to talk about, like, who Lara is as a character. So, like, a quick character synopsis. She was created in 1993 originally by six designers who wanted to make her an Indiana Jones spinoff, but they ended up taking this in a different way. Toby Gard was the one who pitched Laura Cruz, because fun fact, initially, and I think I've said this fun, it's not even really a fun fact because I mention it every damn time I can on this show. Laura Cruz was originally supposed to be an archaeologist from South America. And then they ended up changing her to the boring British archaeologist that we have for everything, as always. Because if they're not British, is it interesting? I don't know. According to film, they're not.
Is it stealing, you know, ancient treasures if you're not British, some British archaeologist? Are you not just destroying history if you're not a British archaeologist?
Fair.
You know.
And that was when it was decided on Lara Croft as being her name. Original timeline, based upon Core Design's vision, Lara was the daughter of Lord Henshingley Croft and was raised to be an aristocrat. At 21, on the way home from a ski trip, her plane crashed in the Himalayas. As the only survivor, she learned how to live in hostile conditions on her own. This experience made her who she is. Once returning to the upper-class British society, she then truly realized her place was adventure and adventure alone. Over the next several years, she gained knowledge of ancient civilizations. Her family disowned their daughter, so she turned to write to fund her trips, and then after discovering several ancient sites of archaeological interest, she made a name for herself by creating travel books and detailed journals of her adventures. She also fought dinosaurs. But, like, to be honest, like, one of the reasons that I really like her, we'll talk about it a little bit more as we go into the but why those, but it is this really strong shift and juxtaposition between who Lara is supposed to be in British society and who she wants to be. And that was something that, like, I understood when I played the games a little bit, but when I watched the first Tomb Raider movie, that was when I kind of, like, it really hit me. Like, I liked Lara because she was a badass and I could be a badass while playing her, but then when I watched the first Tomb Raider movie, it was like, oh no, this is actually why I like her, because she says, F you, I'm not going to wear your stupid sundress. I'm going to put on this motorcycle jacket and go be an archaeologist, which I have a lot of appreciation for. If there are no more questions, we're going to move into our But Why Those after this message from our sponsors, Manscaped. Our friends at Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, are here to tell you that you need to use the best tools for the job so you can be ready for anything on that special day. Now, 2 million men are already trusting Manscaped products to groom, and we want to make sure you become one of them. The best way to get started is with the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0, full of the best products to keep you looking, smelling, and feeling nice. It features the third generation Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, which has advanced skin safe technology and features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. It's also waterproof, which prevents a mess on the bathroom floor and in the sink. Plus, if you're looking to smell fresh, check out the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. These products keep your boys from sweating, smelling, and sticking. The Perfect Package 3.0 will also come with a pair of Manscaped boxers. That'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day. It's time to upgrade those overused pair of boxers to Manscaped's high-performance anti-chafing ones. They're easily the comfiest boxers I have ever touched. This is the perfect package to help you get the perfect package. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code BUTWHYTHO at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code BUTWHYTHOUGH. Happy Valentine's Day from Manscaped.
So the first But Why Though, taking a page out of Matt's book, is that it is a successful franchise. After the first game released on the Saturn 96 from the simple buzz alone, Sony bought the exclusive rights for the first three games. It was one of PlayStation's biggest momentum games and pushed the console forward both in game mechanics and console sales. So Tomb Raider 1 sold 7.5 million copies, Tomb Raider 2 sold 8 million, and the franchise total, which is actually, if you put this in perspective, there are 17 games for both console and PC, and total the franchise sold 42 million. So the Tomb Raider 1 and Tomb Raider 2 makes up a lot of that money for 17 games. So games were produced by Core Design until 2003, and then the rest were Crystal Dynamics. 24 in total when you include the mobile and web Java-based games. So Sega Saturn, and the Sega Saturn, which a lot of people don't know that Tomb Raider 1 initially came out on the Sega Saturn, just because it was ported only to the PlayStation 1 and the Sega Saturn died and the PlayStation
survived. Sega Saturn was way overpriced and was a terrible console that died and pretty much set Sega on their downhill spiral.
Also, see our Dreamcast episode.
They weren't for the Sega Saturn doing so bad. Dreamcast could have been so much more better. More well. Whatever. I don't even know. Thanks, Sega Saturn. You killed the best console.
I had a Sega Saturn. I liked it.
I could not afford a Sega Saturn for that. I mean, it looked cool, but there was no way.
I just had one way after. I didn't have one like during the thing. I had one like when it was already like dying already.
The original games was 42 million, and then the Tomb Raider games over time, now all of them taking into account the 24, the Tomb Raider games have sold over 81 million copies worldwide, and the series has been generally met with critical acclaim and is noted as one of the pioneers of the action adventure genre. I put one of because I don't want to get added, but let's be real, Lara Croft started this entire damn game and genre, and y'all can suck it.
Like what's before it? Like Turok? Like, is it like Turok even like before that? Like after this? Like, there's. I can't think of another one that's like action adventure-y in this way until we get like Uncharted and like Far Cry and like all those other ones that are basically just the same thing.
Exactly.
I'm talking about Uncharted was the very first one ever in existence and the only one that ever existed. I'm here for all the Uncharted slander.
I love Uncharted. But, like, I'm also going to talk about how, I'll talk about it later. I have feelings. Lara Croft has also become one of the most recognizable video game character protagonists and has won accolades and earning places on the Walk of Game and the Guinness Book of World Records, alongside being praised for pioneering female characters in video games. But that also means that she has been subject to controversy because of the sex appeal, which I will get on my platform and talk about and defend because her boobs are fine, guys. It's okay. But beyond that, she also had a comic book series line from 1999 to 2005, which there was a Witchblade Tomb Raider crossover that I can't find anywhere, and if anybody listening to this podcast has a link to where I can buy that, please send it to me, because it looks amazing, and Witchblade is also one of my favorite things. There are 5 novels that came out from 2003 to 2018. There are 11 collectible soundtracks that come from both the movies and the later games. And then there are...
When are we having the episode of what was more prevalent, movies having their own video games or video games having their own soundtracks?
Oh, I don't know.
Both things basically are non-existent today.
So Lara Croft Tomb Raider came out in 2001 with a budget of $115 million. It made $47 million its opening weekend, which is an adjusted $71 million, and ended its domestic run with an adjusted $197 million. So made its money back. And then worldwide, it was $274 million worldwide, which means it doubled its money, which is pretty damn good. It is the number one box office video game adaptation movie, which, Adrian, I don't know if you want to do a quick doodle to a Google to...
I don't think that is...
No, I don't think it's true anymore because everything is billions of dollars now.
Yeah, Detective Pikachu exists. Rampage exists.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Rampage Inflation is exists. A video game movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never play the game?
No.
Arcade game.
Arcade game, and then they had a port for it on the.
I thought The Rock Nintendo was just support. Like, put me in a kaiju movie, and they did.
No, that's a video game movie. Right. The problem is they kind of messed up the video game part, it looks like, but. Because they had to have humans.
It's eight worldwide box office without adjusting for inflation.
And domestic.
So I think adjusting for inflation. Well, that's too hard to find, Kate. Like that's
okay.
That's
according work. With this with these notes in 2017, when looking at adjusted for actual domestic gross, Warcraft, Angry Birds, and Prince of Persia outdo it, but they outdo it because of foreign market.
There's been a second Angry Birds since we had this episode.
I know.
Well, the second Angry Birds isn't up there. Rampage and Detective Pikachu are on that list now, but it's still up there. Like, that movie came out in 2001 and still made $274 million.
All the
movies above it are 2010 and above.
That makes sense.
Inflation box office.
Is World of Warcraft still number one?
World of Warcraft still is number one because it made, like, $300 million in China.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough one to beat. Detective Pikachu almost beat it, but...
Yeah, I would say Tomb Raider is still my favorite direct video game adaptation that I have a connection to. Detective Pikachu is my favorite live action adaptation of an anime game thingy that I don't really know that well.
Yeah, I mean, the first movie is really, really good. Like, it gives you everything you need to know. Like, here is the movie. Like, there's no, like, real backstory or anything like that.
A banging, kind of, like early 2000s hacker soundtrack.
The opening is fantastic.
Fantastic. And sadly, it has a 5.7 on IMDb and a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Damn, is that bad on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm really angry about that. Like, it bugs me because a lot of the Rotten Tomatoes stuff is from newer reviews of it and everything. And, like, ultimately for me, like, as a fan of the game series, I don't think that there's another movie. Well, in Vikander's Tomb Raider does a really good job with its adaptation, but, like, the entire... It does, actually.
Yeah, it does.
It does it extremely well. I mean, it kind of squishes Tomb Raider to... Adrian, I swear, you can, like, as I said in that review, you get dual wield guns against the last boss, and that was the only good thing.
We
about
didn't have
that
a last
Tomb
boss,
Raider
Kate.
Movie.
We had a disease because they didn't want to go full mystic.
Anyway, go listen to that review.
Was she gonna shoot the disease? Was she gonna get my gun to shoot that disease?
John Wick the disease.
John Wick would. You know what? John Wick would shoot the disease and he would win.
Yeah.
Those people sitting outside.
I mean, that Rotten
Tomatoes
thing is more annoying given the fact that the second movie is higher.
Yes. My last point on the Tomb Raider movie is one of the reasons why I really like it is because its opening is pretty much the best description of the mansion tutorial level, as well as the little MP3 player that she's going for, is visually designed off of something that you look for in the game, and it's like match for match perfect. And like Angelina Jolie was perfect to play for the original Lara Croft.
Are you on a nickname basis with Angelina
Jolie? No, I have a friend named Angie, and I don't know why I thought of her.
But also, we do have to remember, this is still 2001. Video games, one, are hardly still very accepted, let alone, like, video game adaptations. Because before this, I know we have, like, the Super Mario Bros., which is terrible. And then
this was
really
the first...
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat, really the first one, I think it's just... The first one's actually pretty good. The second one is horrendous, again. But, like, outside of those three movies, I couldn't tell you another one. Now, some of them might have, like, a little weird, you know, connotation to one, but not, like, full on.
So, like... I know that, like, this one doesn't do well critically, but I feel like if you talk to, like, video game fans or even just general audiences and you asked what their top video game movies are, it would be, like, Mortal Kombat and Tomb Raider. Those two things would be there.
Yeah.
I thought this one was going to be in the 50s, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I would... I would probably I would probably put it at, like, a 50 or a 60, taking my bias out of it, because I know this movie script by heart. Like, I have seen it too many times. But that moves us into the abysmal thing that is called Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, where they replace Daniel Craig Bond girl, which is the best thing. Daniel Craig is the only Bond to have been a Bond girl before he was a Bond. It's, if you have not rewatched Tomb Raider, watch it through that lens, and it is amazing. So
Cradle, but then we get terrible Gerard Butler.
Yeah, Gerard Butler, I like the man. But also, like, I feel like he comes in to do sequels of things that other, like, British slash accented Irish, I don't know what, Scott, I don't know, like, UK accented people are. Gerard Butler is like, oh, you need one to fill in? Here I am. And I feel like that's very much the case here. So Cradle of Life came out in 2003. It had a $95 million budget, and it opened at a $21 million opening weekend, $30 million adjusted. It ended up grossing $92 million adjusted and made $156 worldwide. Bah, bah, bah.
That's
this movie is terrible.
That's still 12. On like, the list, just so we're clear, like that's still like really, really high, for like money wise. Because I was looking at the list because you mentioned it, I was like, well, what other video game movies really are there before that date? You have Super Mario Brothers 1993, Double Dragon 1994, Street Fighter 1994, Mortal Kombat, both of the Mortal Kombats, and then Wing Commander 1999, and then you have Tomb Raider, and then after Tomb Raider, then you have Resident Evil, House of Dead. Alone in the Dark, Doom, Silent Hill. Like,
I would argue that Tomb Raider definitely kicks off, because if you look, if you look at the protagonists in all of those, I think Tomb Raider kicks off greenlighting these movies, especially when they have a female protagonist. Female protagonist with guns killing things, I feel like, becomes a genre.
So one, yeah. Wing Commander, I didn't really know that movie existed.
That has Keanu Reeves in it, doesn't it?
What?
Wing Commander?
As Matthew Lillard.
Oh, no, Matthew Lillard. That's what it was. Never mind.
I was like, I'm pretty sure, no. That one doesn't exist. What was the thing? I had another one before you said it. What was the other one you said right after? Double Dragon. I actually like Double Dragon movie, but I know everybody hated that movie.
Freddie Prinze Jr. That's who it has in it. Sorry.
And yeah. There's your problem. I mean,
and even money-wise there, Mortal Kombat makes the most at $120 million, and the other ones are $51 million, $11 million, $4 million, you know.
So
they don't do nearly as well as the first.
The funny thing about Street Fighter, I remember watching another kid going, I like this, even though I hated what they did with Blanca, but also I like Jean-Claude Van Damme and other stuff. But it was one of those, I was like, you know what? They came back, and I was like, I'll try to rewatch this movie. I couldn't do it. I was like, oh my gosh. It was like, this movie is terrible.
I'm going to
remain bad because it's no comment. It's not a Street Fighter movie. I will fully...
No, like, it is not a Street
I will
Fighter
die movie. On that hill. Like, that's not a Street Fighter movie. That movie's terrible. So, all of the cool Street Fighter stuff isn't in the movie, and I feel bad for every actor who had to be in that movie.
Okay, you know what? That's how I feel about DOA. That Dead or Alive movie that we got, because, yeah.
He doesn't even do the splits. He doesn't even do the Van Damme splits in that movie. Like, that's a perfect movie for him to do the splits, and he doesn't even do it.
So I really like the Street Fighter movie.
No, you have to rewatch it. I did when I was a kid.
I watched it in like 2012. Like, I didn't watch it as a child.
You were definitely a child then. You clearly had to have been. You need to rewatch that movie then. That is terrible. I thought you tried to rewatch it when I did, and I couldn't make it.
Poor no. Raul Julia, dude. Like, that guy had to, like...
How did he fit in that suit?
Anyway, so sadly, Cradle of the Life has a 24%. On Rotten Tomatoes, so 4% better because critics are dumb. I say this as a critic. I have insight into that culture. But yeah. So then, since we had first done this episode, we now have another Tomb Raider movie, just Tomb Raider. That came out in 2018, and Lara Croft is played by Alicia Vikander, who I initially did not like for the role, and then I saw how jacked she was, And, like, homegirl has, like, 0% body fat, an 8-pack, and when she did her pull-ups on that plane, you saw all of her back muscles. So, I'm here for it. She did Lara proud. But it is important to note that she is specifically playing, I call it Reboot Lara, and it's technically a prequel, not a reboot, but it's a reboot. But she's playing Lara Croft from the 2013 games, and in my opinion, it is a very well done adaptation for that Lara. Like, I can't imagine, like, if Angelina Jolie was perfect for original Lara Croft, Alicia Vikander is perfect for 2013 Lara Croft. And I really, I can't wait to get a sequel to this. We're supposed to be getting a sequel to this, but COVID exists now. So who knows?
Well, I mean, they did confirm that one is happening.
Yeah.
So there is one coming. Yeah, I mean, we don't know
it's
what
year
that
is. It was a great intro movie. Like,
yes.
It gives you everything you need to know. I wish he would have got her double guns in the second movie, but I thought it was good. But I think when we talk about it, right, like, is it one of those times where you didn't know if you're going to get a second movie, so, like, just give her the double guns now because you don't know if you're going to get greenlit for that second one. And especially, like, when it doesn't even make as much money as the 2001 Tomb Raider, like, that's a valid fear, but I would have liked to see it, like,
I like the movie.
But it's good. Alicia Vikander's jacked. She's super jacked.
Yeah, no. It's definitely one of those, like, It's a great setup movie. I don't think it's, like, the greatest movie ever or anything. I did enjoy it. There's still some issues with the double guns, a few at the beginning, and then obviously the whole that we wanted to make mystic stuff into regular diseases. But I think what it does is set up movie to where I expect big things from the second movie that we're getting.
Yeah.
Like, if the second movie doesn't hit, like, super well, then it's just, like, I don't know, you wasted this whole movie. Because I think there are flaws in the first one, but as Adrian said, it's a setup movie that you're expecting two. And it seems the way they even did it, like, it set up to do multiple movies.
Yeah, I know you're going to get into this in the next, but why, though? But, like, I think the best thing about, like, the Tomb Raider movies in general is that they just, like, they do the game mechanics.
Yes!
Like, she's platforming, she's shooting stuff, like, she's,
my favorite thing is when, so, in the original Tomb Raider games, there's a very specific jump animation when you jump backwards and sideways, and Angelina Jolie does that in her movies, and then there's a very specific bow animation with how Lara moves in the new Tomb Raider games that Vikander does when she's using her bow. And so, like, I, like, as a Tomb Raider fan, I can say that I have eaten very well when it comes to adaptations of material that I love. Which, that is our next point. Game mechanics. Because this is a big one. So, like, there's technically another 3D platformer before this, but, like, what really solidifies it, especially when it comes to magnetic locking to platforms to help ease you into the platforming system, Tomb Raider is the pioneer of that type of gameplay. So it is one of the first, or pioneers, obviously, y'all don't at me, of fully 3D rendered and third person video game platforming, as well as third person video game in general. So the one of the really cool things that Tomb Raider does is it introduces not just, like, this new genre of action adventure, it also introduces platforming, and it also introduces harder AI and enemies, as well as character animations that were made without mocap. One of the other really cool things that it does is you actually have full control of the camera in Tomb Raider, so you leave behind that locked camera position that a lot of games had at the time, which is something that should have been left back then.
People that are still making lock camera games, I don't like you. I don't know why that still exists, and I hate it.
It was, so, like, I played the medium, and I understood why they did it, but it made my head hurt because it shifts your perspective, and it is just very hard to navigate environments in that way. But we can thank Tomb Raider for really pushing how these 3D rendered and open worlds worked, as well as the type of, I don't really know how to explain it, but, like, the type of space that you as a player take up in them. Because when you're playing first person, it's a very different and limited scope of what you're doing. Whereas one of the things that was extremely important to Tomb Raider, especially as you're working through puzzles and platforming, is having a full range of understanding your environment, knowing where you can go, knowing where you can't go, and knowing what pathways you can try. That's something that is really, really key, especially for the trap integration that happens in the game. But that also wasn't everything. Tomb Raider is one of the first games where you actually have moves that link together. So what that means is like flips into another flip, drawing your guns into a flip, the swan dive from a running stance. All of that was smoothly integrated, and you may not really recognize it now because it's what we're used to, but before then, when you had 2D rendered games, there really wasn't a concept of fluidity of motion, especially when you're doing more limited mocap, and being a fully animated piece, you were able to directly have things chained together. There were some really cool codes, like there was a god code that you could put in, or a code that would like make Lara blow up when you did it. And it was just by doing a series of moves, and it was really fun. It was like a backflip, side flip, like that kind of stuff. And just visually, it was great. And I know, like, looking back now, if you look back at old Lara, like, the polygons were polygoning. But back then, that was, like, just really, really good, which is hard to think of now, especially with, like, how amazing Crystal Dynamics has done, you know, their games currently. Additionally, the game helped push analog controls with the second game. So use of both your analog sticks and the D-pad, all that stuff. So controlling the camera, movement, everything like that. You also were given real-time lighting effects with flares. So instead of having entire level designs in one lighting, you would have a level design that would change when you would operate your flare, which is one of my favorite things. And going back to the movie, when she cracks the light sticks, I got very excited because that's directly from the game. And then even if the animations were a little... Oh, I already talked about that. So the next thing when it comes to mechanics... is also when it comes to gameplay. The tutorial is a whole game in and of itself. It says essentially I would spend hours just in the mansion tutorial level. And what this was done was you could have a timed training course in which you would platform, you would go through your traversal and platforming skills as well as your aiming, but then you also had full range throughout the entire mansion. There was a gymnastics area, there were mazes, there were locking the butler in the freezer, which I did all the time. And all of that worked to not only create a tutorial that taught you, but also, at least for me, an open world tutorial helps you get more familiar with how your character acts in those situations or like new items versus an on the rails, now press X, now press Y, okay, go fight something. So that for me is something that is really important about this game. And Croft Manor is probably one of the most iconic video game locations in my mind. And it was also because they hid secrets. So like the manor wasn't just the manor that you could use. Like it was an exhaustive level that was designed to be that way. So yeah. Any thoughts, opinions, ideas?
No, I mean, obviously the tutorial is great. I think we used to have that in older games in general, just making designs where you did stuff. I believe tutorials these days are very lazy, to be honest. I'm not going to say they were all great back then, but I know a lot of games that I played these days, the tutorial is very half-assedly done. And the fact that we don't even get, like, instruction booklets or anything else anymore, and I have to go fight through ad space on a damn internet to find anything, has always bugged me, especially the more complex of games we get. And so having tutorials that allow, not just like you said, to press X, but to be able to actually do what you're doing has always been a plus.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that's also one of the things that I really enjoyed about the Hitman game, or Hitman 3, was because their tutorial level is like just, it's really good. It's learn your character how you want to learn them, which is what I always saw the Tomb Raider one like. And I think you're right. Like, I think I'm more for a tutorial that lets me really get to know my character and have it be a whole thing versus like, oh, the first level of the game and you get some pop-ups as you come in. Because I don't think you really learn a character or mechanics that way, or at least not as quickly as you would if you were playing around.
Yeah, I think it's like just like a learn by doing kind of thing. And I think, like what you said at the beginning, that it's not the first, but it just does it really well. And I think that from our last few video game episodes over the last year and a half or so, I think that's what we've kind of come to understand, that even if it's not the first, like it just does it so well that it makes everything better. Because I was thinking, like, whenever anyone talks about, you know, first the 3D platformer, I think the general consensus would probably be like, oh yeah, well, Mario 64, which does come out the same year that the first Tomb Raider game does, but they're obviously different games. So like, I don't think you can really compare them all that much. And I just think that Tomb Raider probably a little bit more dynamic in the stuff that it does in the 3D world versus like what Mario 64 does when you're kind of just more cartoony jumping around compared to like,
yeah,
badassery jumping around.
Hold on. Have you never jumped off an entire cliff in Mario 64 only to do this flip right at the end and land on your stomach and roll and don't take any damage? That is amazing.
I've done a handstand thing.
But no, when I'm thinking of tutorials too, I know not all of them are probably great, but I know one of my favorite ones when it does come to this whole like interactive thing is probably a lot of the sports games. I know FIFA, NHL, 2K, they just give you like open rinks, open court, open field to where you just can do whatever you'd like to do. And it's untimed anything. And obviously they have stuff that does drills, which is pretty nice. But I do think when it comes to like tutorials of learning characters and moves and even just being able to do stuff, especially more complex stuff, I think sports games at least do it a little better than a lot of stuff I see today.
Yeah. No, I agree there. So moving away from the game mechanics to the most important part of Lara Croft, her boobs. Because I'm going to talk about them a lot. In this section. But the real part of the section is that the real but why though here is Lara Croft easily became one of the largest feminist icons in gaming, one of the most well-known female characters. And outside of Samus Aran, who showed up suited, so you didn't know that Samus was a woman until the end, Lara Croft it has the mantle of being one of the very first solo female video game protagonists. And she did so without, and one of the reasons I love her is she did so without being defined by other people around her, which I think is really important and something that like game companies struggle with even today. And even like the new Lara series struggles with making her be her own person outside of like men in her group and stuff like that. So, as I mentioned before, initially the character of Lara Croft was supposed to be designed as a guy because it was supposed to be a direct indie spinoff or Indiana Jones spinoff. And she was reimagined as Laura Cruz, which, as I mentioned, I'm still very bitter about because that would have been amazing. And she took inspiration from Tank Girl. So her boobs were inspired by the rocket bra that Tank Girl wears. But more specifically, it was Tank Girl's attitude, essentially owning her objectification, brandishing her promiscuity, and pretty much breaking the norms of what was accepted to be feminine. So if I'm also a huge fan of Tank Girl. If you don't know, and if you look up the original artwork for Lara, it was very irreverent, not towards Lara, but towards like any concepts of femininity. Like she had a very not hypersexualized, but she had a traditionally beautiful and sexy body. But at the same time, like she's drawn holding severed heads. Like the inspiration for Lara Croft came from this movement of girl power, GRRRL, and like this idea of pushing back against norms. And this was really one of the first times, I don't want to say first, like the 60s is all about sexual empowerment and everything like that, but through characters like Tank Girl, you essentially got women who were, and I'm trying to figure out how to explain it. It's sex positive, I guess, is the easiest way. You could be sexy without being sexual. And then there were issues that came from that, not just with people not liking her boobs, but actually some really bad decisions that Core Design made in her marketing. So for initially when Toby Gard created her, she wasn't supposed to be a quote unquote tits out for the lad type hero. But essentially what happened was the moment she came out, cyber art got a hold of her. There were nude patches for all the games, which she would play naked. And then Core Design's greenlit appearances in magazines with titles like Silicone Girl or Bigger Than Pammy, Wiser Than Yoda. And there was a lot of sexualization that ended up getting pushed by Eidos or Eidos pushing Kor to essentially like include all of these like objectifying pieces. And this is one of the reasons that Toby actually left Kor Design, because he just like essentially they took his character and just ran her into this like hypersexual and not really respected, at least from like a marketing standpoint person. There's this story that like people had purposely made her boobs like absurdly large because they just like flipped it all to the end. But for me, when we look back and we look at kind of her history, like Lara Croft as a character in her own game, there isn't any objectification that happens. And I think that there's an important distinction between sexualization and objectification. So like when you look at a character who is objectified, that character doesn't have their own agency. They're defined by people around them, and the only thing they are is any sort of sexual gratitude that they can give to another party. Whereas somebody who is sexualized and is shown in like that type of thing, they can be sexy, they can have, you know, larger breasts, they can, you know, be nude, all that stuff, but they can also still end up means like sexy doesn't mean that you're objectified. And I think in the games that is very much who Lara is. Like they're like, she is just a character who happens to have really big boobs, but she's also a really smart archaeologist. She's a character who refuses to let anybody push her around, and she fights freaking dinosaurs. And so, like, for me, when we have this larger conversation about how Lara Croft, it was made for men, like, it was marketed for men, but the game itself, it was very respectful to the character. So I think when we have those conversations, we ignore what the actual original games did, and we focus so much on what, like, the really shitty decisions that Kor and Eidos made, and let that kind of, like, supersede her actual legacy, which for little girls like me was, I got to be a badass archaeologist. So the larger part about this, too, is that Lara Croft, like I said, fit into this larger piece of 90s feminism, of girl power, of riot girls. And Lara Croft was made to essentially fit into the 90s Britpop aesthetic. So think about, like, Spice Girls, Buffy, Xena, all of that type of stuff. Adrian's currently moving his head, and I feel like he's singing a Spice Girl song.
Yes, I was. In my head. Yeah. Very much so.
But yeah, so, and from that, you get all the things that I just talked about. You get a lot of characters and fans of those characters who are really pushing to try and demolish double standards that separated genders and establish treatment and representation for women in both, like, law and media. And, like, feminism in the 90s, like, this is probably one of the larger pieces where you get to see direct action on, like, female heroines taking place in media. And that doesn't mean it didn't happen before, but it means in the 90s you have an explosion of female characters leading the way in both video games and television and film as well. Women really get to be action hero things. And you also see a value in reclaiming girly aesthetics and girly things like Buffy. And then you just have, like, these larger celebrations of bodies and sex positivity, which I think when we look at it, when you look at it from the 2013 lens, which is when the first conversation started with, like, reducing Lara's breast size, making her more normal and changing her, which, like, I'm fine with because those games are hyper realistic animated versus how all the other stuff was. It kind of misses the point of, like, the type of feminism that Lara Croft was originally playing into, was like, no, we can be sexy and we can be these things and we can also kick ass, which is extremely important. And I think that it's something that a lot of people still struggle with now, both when it comes to receiving media and producing media. So I just want to make sure that that stays at the center of the conversation, because when Lara initially came out, all of the crappy marketing aside, she was a feminist icon because of these things and because of the feminism of the 90s and early 2000s that she fit into. So this is where we get into the large argument of whether or not the original Lara Croft can be sexy and also be a feminist. So, alluded to it the whole time, when the rebooted Lara Croft came out, and I say reboot just because her design was overhauled, there was a lot of talk about how Lara's initial sex appeal was a large problem and they needed to correct it. Now, when we look back on the marketing, models hired to play Lara Croft, including former Page Three. Page Three is a nudie magazine model who Nell McAndrew was later fired for posing for nudes as Lara for Playboy. Essentially, Lara becomes a fake woman and is not human and not a real woman, so she can't be feminist. And the reason I use fake and real is because apparently, because she isn't ascribed like a lot of emotions in the games, that somehow removes any sort of femininity, because you can't just be a badass. You have to also have all these other things. That's a whole topic. And then also she's frail in the fact that, like, she doesn't have any clothes on, or like she's wearing, you know, kind of like the booty shorts and like the sleeveless shirt for like everything. She doesn't have a lot of supplies. She doesn't have a team. And all of that makes men want to protect her and all that kind of stuff. And that's like the argument as to why original Lara can't be feminist. But like for me, when I look at like why she has been a feminist icon for me and why she is really important for representing women in the gaming space, whether she was created regardless of the marketing cycle, regardless of the fact that she was created by dudes, is the fact that the only women in video games were objects of the male protagonist. So fantasy dominatrix types, damsels, side characters. And this is obviously Samus Aran notwithstanding before she came around. And while she was marketed to men and boys, the early consumer reports from Eidos said that 40% of the people buying her games were female. So like regardless of this really high push towards the hypersexualization of Lara Croft in magazines and TV and everything, there was still a very large fan base of women and girls who were picking up these games to play. This is a quote about her. She not only took what was traditionally a man's role, she was a strong woman in her own right, dangerous, intelligent, and attractive. In Tomb Raider, we learn that Lara is a freelance adventurer and archaeologist. She plays for sport over money. That's one of my favorite lines that she ever says in anything ever, meaning that her time is as flexible as her body. She's independent outside of her job too, as she has recently moved into an expansive mansion and she bought for herself. Her hips are not for bearing the babies of a man she may fall in love with, but for the gun holsters to lie. To some people, Lara was a sex symbol and was this beautiful woman who was positioned as a pinup character in advertisements, but she was also inspirational on so many levels and had a fairly fleshed out character and a very interesting one. And she was inspirational in terms of her independence and quick wit. And that's from Megan Marie, who's a game scholar. And for me, like, that sums up why I love her. I wrote a piece about it that's on the website right now where I talk about, like why Lara Croft is more than the male gaze and why we can't throw out the original Lara Croft for the sake of the new one. Like, we can celebrate both because they both do different things.
Yeah, which kind of goes two things I have about this whole entire thing. Of one, we're still thinking at the time of, you said 40% of her audience was female. We're female and stuff, but the funny thing we get when we talk about video games, especially during the 90s and everything else, of I don't think a lot of little girls are looking at Playboy. Yep. I don't think they're looking at a lot of these advertisements, and especially considering a lot of these generational people think that video games were for kids in the first place. Yeah. Marketing stuff you're talking about probably wasn't even for them, much of the part. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the weird thing. That's why this is always when I hear this stuff and sell it, I'm like, dude, so 30-year-olds who were not playing the game, as you all said, they were for kids, was not getting all this marketing type stuff. The second thing that comes to, and kind of with an inclusion of, which Warcraft kind of reminded me of, especially if you've talked and done stuff, and then we even moved from the 90s feminist girl power stuff, is when we did Seinfeld episode of Elaine, who is very sex positive, yeah. And you talked about on that episode and how that kind of goes away from the norms of everything. Obviously, Elaine was more of just a comic, you know, comedian type yeah. show, but just kind of you see throughout the entire different genres of more than just being, you know, I guess technically the badass who fights dinosaurs, but the other badass who fights people for sponges.
Yes.
And so kind of what we see throughout this whole thing, and just the in general, people basically get confused, whatever, this whole thing between can people be sexy anymore, yeah. And all the stuff that we see in sex positive and all the other stuff.
Yeah, and that's been like my biggest problem, like especially when I've tried to have conversations, and obviously don't have conversations online, and I haven't tried to in a while, but like when I was like first coming onto Twitter and like some of the newer games, the new Tomb Raider games were coming out, like people would automatically just say, oh yeah, the old Lara was trash, and I was like, but why? It's like, oh, her boobs. I was like, okay, but why did you play the games? Like, did you actually see her story? Did you actually see what she did? Or do you just see that she was a boobs and just write her off? Because like that for me is just as bad as, you know, like you're defining her by her looks either way. Either you're somebody who is buying into the Playboy magazines and that's the only reason you like her, or you're somebody who is completely throwing her in the trash bin because she has big boobs. And that's something that bugs me to no end.
Which we've seen a lot of, actually, since we started this podcast in general, just a lot of stuff where the people who are supposed to be for change who end up, just all they end up doing, defining the people they say stuff by simpler terms, like you said, of boobs. And we've seen it with a variety of things, but yeah, like...
Yeah.
I saw boobs and that's bad. Yeah. Like,
so and this think, is like no boobs
don't exist
because like it and this is a conversation we have in anime all the time. And this is no shade to like the reboot lore because like honestly, like watching Vikander's movie, I actually ended up with a larger appreciation of the first two Tomb Raiders games than I did having, you know, than I play this. I don't like them, but like I had a larger appreciation. Like Lara Croft doesn't have to be defined by her body, but like we also need to notice that Lara Croft is doing two different things in two completely different generations of both gaming and feminism. And I think that that's something that a lot of people just completely forget or ignore. Yeah. Boobs good.
Yeah, I mean, that's like my thing here, right? Like, first of all, who doesn't like boobs? Like, point me out a person, and if they don't like boobs, I'm going to call them.
There's a reason I appreciate DOA's jiggle physics.
Yeah, like just stop. But also like oh, she's hypersexualized and blah 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 blah. And like people are doing all these new things. Rule 34 exists. We talked about a Super Mario porno during our Mario episode. Like those things happen. So to like let that just influence your opinion on the game, like just shows how much. I don't want to gatekeep Tomb Raider, but like it just shows like how much you just don't care about the character just from the get-go.
Yeah.
And your arguments are kind of invalid to me at that point.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. We talk about which we kind of mentioned of stuff of people as we talk about the whole thing of people like fantasizing or any type of other stuff, like you are literally doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Obviously there are going to be people that do that. We know, and it's bad, but at the end of the day, if that's what you are doing to make sure you're quote unquote stopping it, you are still doing the exact same
thing. Well, and that's like the other thing too, that like, for me, like when we look at this Tomb Raider narrative, Toby, like the guy who created Lara left the company because of how shitty the company was marketing her. And that is on the company. But like, you can't put that on the character because literally the dude was doing what he could to protect his character and make her this way. And so much of the conversation has, they don't even blame Eidos and Crystal Core for this. They're just like, oh no, boob's bad, dev's bad. And I'm just like, no, honey, that's not how it works. Like, play the game and then we can talk.
Angie Jolie movies, are those bad too? Because
yes,
Angelina Jolie
some
has
of,
boobs.
Yeah,
so like,
some of them had said that.
You can't like the movie and not like the game for when it's like the same thing. Just because like Angelina Jolie's hot, like doesn't give you a pass to not like. I don't know. Just doesn't make any sense in my head.
No, I completely agree. That's the hill I will die on. I wrote a whole article on it. Go read it. I think it also just comes from a very personal place because like I would say Lara Croft is the strongest woman I had in media for a very long time. And that means something to me. So I get a little angry when people try to take
But when
away.
You were a little kid, did you see all the little
No,
Playboy
I
magazines?
Didn't. I did not see any of the Playboy
Apparently
magazines.
They were worried all
I
that's what all
see,
you saw.
Well, and that's the thing, because like she didn't just do Playboy magazines, like they also I think she was like on cover of Wired that had like some of that stuff. Like some of those titles.
No kid is reading
things.
Wired.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like I didn't see that. My mom didn't even see that. My mom just said, ooh, female Indiana Jones. My kid wants to be an Egyptologist when she grows up. Here we go. This is perfect for her. And that's really important. Like, you can say whatever you want about Eidos and Core, but, like, leave Lara herself out of this, damn it.
Unless they put, I guess I did put in the game, but anyways.
What?
No, I was just like, unless they're like handing those Playboys out to all the people buying the game,
they put the nude patch in, so like.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah.
Eidos and Core messed this up a lot, but it was really not what the creator wanted, and I think that that's a really important standpoint to make. Because, like, the creator of Blood Rain and, like, Bayonetta, they want their characters to be seen, like, as those sexy things. And Toby Gard was just like, she's an archaeologist adventure, guys. Please stop making her have nude patches.
I mean, it's still just funny when we have these conversations, because it always end up being, well, you're a woman. You either get to be sexy or you get to be intelligent, but you're not allowed to be both.
Right? And I hate that. And Lara Croft.
And I'm like, I thought you were the good ones. Like, what are you talking about?
And Lara Croft is both. And that's
you must
important.
Be ugly if you're smart, or you must be dumb if you're thinking. I'm like, time out, what?
Anyway, stop putting people into gender restrictive boxes. Let them be whatever the hell they want to be, and embrace your sexuality. It's not going to kill anything. This brings us to the reboots, which I feel like I've kind of slandered a lot up to this point, just because of this. But the reboot, reboot in quotations, it's actually a prequel to the existing series. They do retcon some timeline things, but ultimately it is made to be a prequel and not a soft reboot. The reboot series, or the new series, launched in 2013 with Square Enix as publisher and Crystal Dynamics, and now Eidos Montreal developing. It has been in the works. It was in the works since Underworld's release in 2008, Tomb Raider Underworld. That is a very good game. The goal was to change everything, and this is partially due to the lackluster responses to the games and the atrocities that exist, like Angel of Darkness, which I appreciated, but like it was very bad. So essentially, they saw it as something, how do you say this? Instead of saying, hey guys, maybe we don't release a game every year, they said, hey guys, people don't like 3D platformers anymore, so let's redo the whole system and throw it all out.
You know what they said? They said people like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Tomb Raider 2013 was actually the best-selling game of this, the best-selling game series of 2013. I bought it, like, day one. Like, I was really excited. It's written by Rihanna Pratchett, who's really, really famous now. She also did Heavenly Sword and Mirror's Edge, which are also two really phenomenal games with female protagonists. Like, they're dope.
Mirror's Edge is amazing.
One of the most underrated games of the 360 generation. Like, that game is so phenomenal. The parkour and just, ugh.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree.
Chef's kiss. Now, the way she was described was that she's human now because she's emotional and she's vulnerable. I personally make the frail argument, but in a different way, because where she had no clothes on here, now she has like no emotional fortitude. Sorry, I just have a lot of issues. So quoting Rihanna Pratchett, she said, we're careful to make sure that people do not underestimate her because of her gender. We try to make others in the game utter gender-based slurs. We tried not to make others in the game utter gender-based slurs. The way Lara is marketed now is not sexualized. It's still beautiful. It's still strong. And it's still characterful. But it's not sexualized in the way that it has been before. I was attracted to this project because she wasn't over-sexualized. She shows who she is as a person, not as an object. And this is where Kate gets mad, because Lara Croft was never an object. As I already said, the marketing campaign made her that way. So yeah, do a different marketing campaign. Also, one of the reasons that I really don't like the first Tomb Raider games is because it is like Lara Croft is almost sexually assaulted in the middle of one of them. And while they don't utter gender-based slurs, they definitely do make allusions to having their way with Lara. And they go ham on the dying sounds, where it is just her moaning and grunting. And as much as they say that they tried to not define her as something that was sexualized, they very much did. And in a way that, like, in my opinion, was a lot worse. Because, like, you don't need to make a character vulnerable by making her about to be assaulted. And that bothers me. But yeah, so, like, when I read this quote from Rihanna Pratchett and when I played the game, like, there was just this really big dissonance, because I wasn't empowered by this Lara. And I understand that as a game, the Tomb Raider 2013, you're supposed to see her before she's become the Lara that we know. But it bothers me because why do we need to have that? Like, why can't you just have a woman be strong and be an intelligent archaeologist and also, like, be in control of her own body and all of these things? Like, I didn't need to see Lara being traumatized over... Because that first game... So much of it, Lara has, like, no resources. She's consistently in harm's way, and, like, she's surrounded by dudes. And it is just so aggressively, like, trauma porn that, like, it is hard to get through. And I had that game 100%ed, and it was, like, it's just... Because I kept wanting it to get better. I was hoping more tombs would pop up. None of it did. And so, like... It's hard for me to hear the feminist arguments for Tomb Raider 13 when, like, I had such a negative experience playing it, especially as somebody who, like, finds power in the original.
The funny thing is we've heard that, I mean, that's an argument that we've heard not just from you, but I've heard multiple times from a lot of people about this reboot stuff. And it's just interesting of, like, we throw out the original because boobs... But, you know, the new feminist power is I get to survive sexual assault.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Like, you don't have to traumatize. Like, a woman doesn't have to be traumatized in order to become a badass. She can just be a badass, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And we need to get to the point where that is okay. So, also...
But Jonah exists. We don't get Jonah.
This is true. I love Jonah. Is a phenomenal character. So, one of the things, and I will put it here because I don't think I actually talked about it. One of the really good things that the new series does is it establishes a cast of characters that, while, yes, it does decenter Lara, it does also give you a more in-depth story. And you get really cool characters like Jonah. Like, Jonah's dope. I do really like him. So Tomb Raider 2013 brings a lot of new players into the franchise. And, like, this isn't me saying that, like, if you only like the 2013 games, you don't belong here. Like, you definitely do. But it is a very different experience than what a lot of people who had been playing Tomb Raider know and expected from the games. So it's important to note that while Uncharted was influenced by the original Tomb Raider games, the new Tomb Raider games were heavily influenced by Uncharted, which led to a lot of people just calling it an Uncharted ripoff, which I'm not totally against because I feel like, yes, it was, even though Uncharted was a ripoff of Lara Croft, which was a ripoff of Indiana Jones. So here we are. The cycle continues. But the reason that I have issues with the new Tomb Raider games, outside of Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which is my favorite, and God, I love that game so much, is that it completely removed a lot of the mechanics that originally existed in the original Tomb Raider series and instead replaced them with with RPG mechanics, a pretty close to FPS combat system, and stealth mechanics that weren't ever present.
So they made Assassin's Creed.
Pretty much. You essentially end up speccing Lara based on experience points. You get skill trees like Brawler, Survivor, and Hunter. You have the stealth mechanic. And while players solve puzzles during the game in its main campaign and the optional content, I argue, like, having played it through, like, I literally kept trying to find every damn thing I could because I wanted the game to be better and I wanted to like it more. The majority of the puzzle solving actually happens in the optional content. So if you just do the mainline story and avoid it, you miss all of the puzzles. And because, like, the puzzle mechanic that is introduced is actually really interesting, and as they build on it as a series goes on, it hits, like, really full force in Shadow of the Tomb Raider. But you have smaller world puzzles that then fit into larger world puzzles that help you traverse and progress in your levels that I think is really, really well done. But all of that is hidden away. Also,
so
what
they made Assassin's Creed.
Yes, Matt, they made Assassin's Creed. It's frustrating. The other thing is that while it is a Tomb Raider game, there are only 7 tombs in the base game of Tomb Raider. No, that's not how that works. Now, Rise of the Tomb Raider institutes a pretty subtle shift, in my opinion. So you have like phenomenal success with Tomb Raider 2013, but Rise of the Tomb Raider really embraces more of the tomb diving, more like in like the geocaching sense, and then also really embraces more puzzles. You still have stronger stealth mechanics, but you do have the option to kind of play without that if you want to, outside of a couple of missions.
So they went full Assassin's
Creed.
Yes,
Matt, they went full Assassin's Creed. Leave it alone. But it's still not Tomb Raider, because when it, like we said, Tomb Raider introduced and did better the fully 3D rendered platforming, and none of that, like there's some in it, but not that much. Then you have Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which is my favorite because it is so chocked full of platforming mechanics, beautiful traversal mechanics, whole bunch of puzzles, extremely difficult tools, tombs that you can go into. And this game underperforms compared to the other two because people didn't like it. And I have not met a single person who is in love with the 2013 game that loves Shadow. And everybody that I know that didn't like the 13 game actually loves Shadow, because we're getting back to the core of what Lara Croft was when it came to the game.
These games are better than any Assassin's Creed game I've ever played.
Oh shit.
Well, clearly that is wrong, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Considering
Shadow of the Tomb Raider got better story than
Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
You clearly
story?
Never played the first few games, so, but that's fine.
What makes me frustrated is Shadow of the Tomb Raider, I think, is what they should have done from the beginning, because Lara goes through some shit in Shadow of the Tomb Raider. It's pretty heavy. She is responsible for some deaths that she has to carry with her. But she doesn't feel like she's being assaulted at every single turn. Like, her vulnerability is more of like the weight that she puts on herself, and not necessarily like this hostility and fear from others, which I think is like one of the best ways to like make a character and to drive a character. Because one of the really important, like one of the really awesome things that I thought was done really well here is in the Tomb Raider movie with Vikander, there's that moment where you get to watch Lara kill her first person, like ever, and it's really emotional. One of my favorite scenes in all of video games is where Lara goes Predator and is like rising up from the water on fire. And one, you see her big ass biceps, but two, she just goes completely berserk, and like you see this flip in her. All that is to say, like, I don't know what is planned for the future of these games, but if Shadow of the Tomb Raider is what I'm going to keep getting, I'm really excited, and I want to see more. When you go into the ratings, though, so the first Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider 2013 had 9.1 on IGN. The Definitive Edition had an 85% on PS4 and 81% on Xbox One and 86% on PC from Metacritic. Rise of the Tomb Raider was a 9.3 on IGN, with PS4 being an 86, 88 for Xbox, and then 86 for PC. And then for Shadow of the Tomb Raider, it ended up with an overall 78 on Metacritic, a 9 out of 10 on Steam, and a 9 out of 10 on IGN. So there have been like some dips, but I think IGN has been pretty consistent in rating about 9s, but I don't know how much I trust IGN's rating on a lot of things. But yeah. And that's really where we are now. You know, we're celebrating 25 years of an icon in gaming that has really influenced everything from game mechanics, sadly, marketing, but also has really defined a generation of gamers. And I know for a lot of people, especially like women gamers, like Tomb Raider and Lara Croft is a big part of like how we got to where we are and how we really found a foothold in gaming. So that's all I got. That's Lara Croft. Any questions, class?
Tell me about Tomb Raider Reloaded. Just kidding. I don't know. I guess they're coming out with an arcade game in Canada. I guess that's like the newest Tomb Raider thing set to.
I did not even know about that.
Yeah, so I don't think it's. I clicked on it because I thought it was going to be, oh, we're going to get another Tomb Raider game. I kind of like the reboots. I like all of them in the same way, but again, I don't have like the same lens of looking at things that Kate does, so I definitely understand those issues with the 2013 game. I haven't replayed it, so I'm sure if I replayed it, I'd see a lot of those things. But the first time I played it, I was just like, I'm gonna shoot this dude in the face.
Yeah.
Stealth mechanic. What is stealth? I got a rocket launcher. I don't think you have a rocket launcher, but I have an arrow. I'm gonna shoot someone in the face. But Shadow of the Tomb Raider is great. I think Shadow of the Tomb Raider is great. I don't know if you mentioned it, but I love like the history things, and the, obviously since you're gonna set it in the region that Shadow of the Tomb Raider is set, I spent more time probably like reading, you know, the Aztec thingamajig or like this thing or that thing, because it was just really, really interesting. I think that game has the best of like those little nuggets throughout the entire of the three.
And I will say, like, I was really worried when they first announced Shadow of the Tomb Raider, because they show her in like a Calavera face paint, and you like, I was like, oh, we're not doing this again, please don't do this with the favorite franchise. But when she goes into it, like a lot of like, they spent a lot of time working with like native consultants and stuff like that, because they use a lot of Nahua and Quiche, which are like the indigenous languages of like the different regions, so like Mayan and Aztec. And you can play the game with that entire, like, you can either play with them talking English, speaking English to Lara, or you can actually turn on the voice actors for those things. Like, I think you're right. Like, I think when it comes to actually like immersing you in a culture and immersing you in like a location, like Shadow of the Tomb Raider, like it, there are very few games that beat it. And honestly, I will say, I don't like these games, but I can at least admit that they are good games, and I see why people like them. They fit the mechanics that Assassin's Creed popularized, and everybody does want to play. And they are like good games. It's just hard for me to get over the bias of like what Lara is in my head and what she is to me. But they are good games, and their scores prove it.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say about the Tomb Raider 2013, stop putting multiplayer in everything.
Yes, please.
I don't need a multiplayer.
in Assassin's Creed.
Which also Assassin's Creed.
Stop putting multiplayer and stuff. We don't, not every game needs a multiplayer. Stop doing it.
Oh, yeah, I should clarify, I 100% of that game outside of the multiplayer achievement.
Yeah, because how could you? Like, how could you?
Like, I tried so hard, and the lobbies, like, maybe worked, like, a week in, and then, like, nothing else worked.
Yeah.
Multiplayer is what killed my fascination with completing games. I had, like, the first four Assassin's Creed games all 100% like that, and then they added multiplayer.
Then Brotherhood happened.
Like, well, never doing that ever again. And then DLC also ruined it, to be honest.
Yeah. But you got any final thoughts, like, Matt?
Mass Effect.
Like, okay, no. Okay, stop. No. So Mass Effect 3, Mass Effect 3's multiplayer is genuinely only good multiplayer that hasn't felt like it was just tacked on. And I spent a solid 2 months of, like, 2 months playing that damn multiplayer every time I got home. It was so well done.
I'll just
done.
Go play Halo.
I loved fine. It. No, they're not so even close to the same thing.
I know. One actually is an
no,
actual multiplayer.
We're
the
not
going to
do
on.
This. No.
Wait, next you're going to tell me that Dead Space's multiplayer was
no,
great
that
too,
was
right?
awful. That was disgusting. It doesn't exist.
Just because you shoot things doesn't mean I want to shoot other people, like, in a lobby with,
but
know,
Mass Effect was essentially just a horde mode, which was why it was good. You just worked with other people to do waves.
If I wanted horde mode, I'd go play actual horde mode.
I hate everybody here. Matt, give your final thoughts.
Obviously, I played Assassin's Creed, so I never bothered to play this. Obviously, I never played the original Tomb Raiders, and honestly, the biggest reason, which a lot of these franchises, when we go back and look at, I didn't own a PlayStation. And thanks, Sony, for being exclusive. So if you want to buy hate exclusives, because all you people that yell these are great franchises, never know, because I didn't own a PlayStation. And
it was only exclusive
I know we're all
for the first three games. It was cross-platform
cool.
for everything else.
Yeah, cool. By that time, I already moved on to something else. Didn't care. But you also talked about how they got worse after time, so thank you for letting me play the shitty games of them all.
And technically, they're not even exclusive anymore, and they've been ported to other things.
Yeah, I didn't want to play a 20-year-old
game. I'm just saying. Also, Tomb Raider Anniversary Edition on the 360 is amazing.
That's about it, like saying I want to go back to fixed lock camera lock camera. I don't want to do that. I've already played them.
I would argue you here, but my first game I ever bought on Steam was the emulator for the first Tomb Raider.
Yeah, and you hated it.
So bad, I never played it again. It made my heart
cry. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not a person that wants to go back to the 90s and play games, or play their games. We move past that. I like seeing the bicep and the polygons and the houses. Their heads are actually circles. It's weird. But obviously I never really played the beginning ones, mainly because I didn't own a PlayStation by then. And then obviously whether they came later down the line or not, I don't know. I've enjoyed the movies. I'm excited for the second movie sequel, which who knows when we're actually going to get that at this point. But I am excited for that one because I do like, except the reboot movie thing or whatever you want to call it, the news thing. So, but obviously, I don't know where they're going to go from it, to be honest, just because, like you said, we've kind of wrapped it up with Shadow, and they're kind of just sitting here. We have a new movies, and I think the movies are trying to follow these, so we don't have anything back. It should be interesting to see. I've always been with the Kate thing. It was always weird to me. It wasn't, obviously, until I got older that I learned that everybody apparently had problems with the old Tomb Raider thing, and I think that's just because, you know, as a kid, I didn't actually have all the Playboy magazines, apparently, to see all this stuff, but...
If you love Tomb Raider, if you want to talk about Tomb Raider, I'm always available. It's my baby. But if you want to help support the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc, BUTWHYTHOPC. You can follow us on Twitter at butwhythoughpc as well as Instagram. We finally hit 1,000 followers on Instagram, so that's really cool. You can follow us on everything at ButWhyThoughPC, and you can follow me on Twitter at OhMyMythRander. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperRuiz93, SuperRuiz93.
Matt?
Uncharted is just nothing but a ripoff, and people who circle jerk over it need to realize where it came from, and you were nothing but a ripoff, and you're the second most overrated franchise behind Mass Effect.